Have you seen the Jinx?
Or maybe this is the bathroom.
Yeah, that's...
You're right. This is the bathroom.
So this is Robert Durst, the final scene in the last season. And I haven't seen the new season at this point. Part 2 is now out, which I'm going to watch. But let's check out the last scene of Robert Durst being interviewed, and he's now going to go into the bathroom, and you can make a decision for yourself what happens next.
There it is. Your court.
You're right, of course. But you can't imagine. What's in the house? You're right. Irish.
Who is he? Maybe his attorney. So he sounds like he's not too impressed with how the deposition interview, whatever happened, went down.
What the hell did I do? Mm-hmm. Killed them all, of course.
Killed them all, of course. Oh, it's freaking me out. that's it. I mean, there's a few seconds left here, but that's the crux of it. Is that an admission to the crime? And I think that this was used as evidence in potentially in future trials against Mr. Durst. Heard that the first time and I thought, whoa, what an incredible documentary. What an incredible thing to get on audio. Just a twist there at the very end. And that was the end of the first part. Now there's part two, and like I said, I haven't watched it yet, but I want to check it out. But first, I want to get into what happened in the first part so that we can all get into this and hopefully be as excited as I was when I first watched this. So this is the opening statement. Opening statement for the prosecution.
We were talking about, at the point of the opening, there had been a reinvestigation. Mr. Durst had just explained how he found out about it. Now, he says that...
John, can you move a little bit to the left? Oh, sure.
You know what? I think I have to move to the left where they can't... I can't move to the right. I have to be in the square.
Come up a little bit.
Yeah. Let me move this here.
Okay, this is critically important. Not really. Courtroom posturing. But the person talking in the pew right there, white-haired... older gentleman, is Robert Durst's attorney. The prosecutor is the one standing up giving the presentation.
Is that better? Okay. All right. So,
that who we're zooming in on is Mr. Durst. Who's Mr. Durst? He was the guy in the last video talking that you didn't see in the bathroom saying those fatal words. For lack of a better term there, that he's saying, kill them all. Killed them all, of course, is the subtitle said there.
So, although Mr. Durst says he found out about the reinvestigation on October 31st, 2000, we're going to produce evidence that shows he actually found out about it earlier. On October 23rd, so this is the 11 days before Mr. Durst allegedly found out that they were reinvestigating his wife's disappearance, he wrote himself a check for $9,000. Now, this would be the first of what would prove to be a pattern of what is called structuring money that Mr. Durst would do. And you're going to hear from not only Mr. Durst. In the Galveston trial, this is Mr. Durst answering. If you cash a check for more than for $10,000, there's a big form that gets filled in. And it takes a long time, and it goes to some agency, some place or another.
The $10,000 that he's referring to, there's a, you know, your bank is like required to report to some higher level if you go over $10,000 or if you get close to it, I guess is one thing that they can also do is if it's within their guidelines, then they're required to report it. So people think, oh, I'll just do less. And sometimes that doesn't work very well either. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not here to give you any advice on that, what amounts you should be taking out or not. But that's what he's referring to with the $10,000.
Executed the following document. This is a durable power of attorney that gave Mr. Durst, the woman who would become his wife, they were not legally married at this time, they would get married very soon after. This gave her power of attorney, in essence, over his money. And I always pay a lot of bills with cash and stuff, restaurants and things like that. But when this first happened in November of 2000, when I first ever went bananas and came down here, I knew if I ever had to go into hiding, I would need cash. Oops. So I started withdrawing money from banks, and I sort of just kept doing it like on remote control or something like that. That's Mr. Durst's testimony from Galveston. So Mr. Durst was aware that there is a reporting issue when you take out more than $10,000 that is reported. So you're going to hear from FBI financial crimes analyst Eric Van Dorn. Now, in addition to the structuring, there is additional evidence that Mr. Durst was aware before October 31st, 2000, of the reinvestigation of Captain's disappearance. So on October 30th, 2000, this is the day before he allegedly found out about the reinvestigation, Mr. Durst...
Oh my gosh, is this the fastest talking prosecutor in the history of the world? I feel like I've gotten so much information from him just in like 2 minutes that he's been talking. 2 minutes and 35 seconds he's been talking. And so I just can't get a word in edgewise with this guy.
Now, who is Debbie Lee Cheriton? Debbie Cheriton is an experienced real estate professional. She and Durst were introduced by Nick Chavin in 1988 and soon after began dating. In the early 1990s, Cheriton and Durst moved in together. After a year and a half living together, they decided to move out. So they had the relationship didn't end, it continued, but they were now living in separate places. The relationship continued after Durst left New York for Trinidad in 1995. In 1998, he began spending more time with Cheriton during his periodic visits to New York. On October 30th, 2000, again, the day before he allegedly found out about the reinvestigation, he gave Cheriton power of attorney. On November 2nd, 2000, allegedly Durst told Cheriton about the reinvestigation. On November 3rd, Durst asked Cheriton to marry him. This information regarding what's up here right now, the November 2nd and November 3rd items, those are coming from Mr. Durst himself, and I'll get...
So... The real estate piece of it, this guy has a lineage, of a family history of being big-time real estate people. I would equate it to like a Trump family. New York, I believe this is a New York family even, and they owned a real estate, I don't know if you want to call it an empire or you know what extent to it was, but they were big in real estate and very wealthy because of it, from what my take was when I watched the documentary.
Get to the,
those are some yellow glasses, by the way.
The document that establishes that. So that is what he is saying happened. On November 5th, 2000, Susan Berman authored a letter to Bob Durst that outlined her financial difficulties.
Who is Susan Berman? The victim in this case. And I think we have to say alleged victim because I think in this case, he gets acquitted, I'm pretty sure. So I'll just throw that in there.
Although there is no direct evidence that Durst ever received this letter, 4 days later, in the midst of his panic about the reinvestigation, he did the following. So on November 9th, he sends Susan Berman a check for $25,000. This would not be the only check Durst would send to Susan shortly before her murder.
And then, so in November of 2000, did you send her this $25,000?
Boom. We're on the interview that we were just watching. At the end of this, he goes to the bathroom, and then we're listening to it. Now they're playing this at trial. And he's going, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that interview. And for good reason, they're using it against him right here.
Yeah, I send her, they're sending her periodically the $25,000. I sent her another one when the car broke. And they right within a couple of weeks.
So basically, you sent her 50 altogether.
Yes.
So is the prosecutor saying like he was planning on committing the murder? So he was going to kind of cover his tracks by saying, "Why would I murder her if I was just giving her all this money right before it happened?" That's an interesting thing. As you can see, this case is so wild. This guy seems in doing some really interesting things. It's hard to put anything past him because he might have done it and felt like that was going to, he was going to get away with it, because he is not a stupid criminal, I would say. You know, if we had to characterize him, you'd probably put him into the category of, you know, he's going to do anything it takes to further what he needs to do. And you can see that in some of the other cases. I mean, at some point he dresses up as a woman, goes and lives this whole alternative life with a new identity and gets away with it. And that takes whatever you want to call it. It takes some gumption to be able to pull that off.
Well, the evidence is going to show that according to Mr. Durr's own testimony, he gave Susan Berman $50,000 roughly in the last little over a month of her life. Now, on November 11, 2000, this is when the media began reporting the reinvestigation.
So that's interesting, because he says, well, that's what the evidence is going to show. Okay, that sounds like a positive fact for Mr. Durst, you know, that he would give her this money right before he kills her. So why was the prosecutor bringing it up? This is a common theme for a prosecutor or for anybody, for all attorneys, which is, they want to present the evidence to the jury to make the jury feel like they're not hiding anything, and to show that, you know, they're going to be a straight shooter with you, and here's the evidence. Here's what the evidence is going to say. They want to bring it out versus allowing the defense to have a Perry Mason moment, which is, why would he do this if he was giving her all this money right beforehand? And that money was probably maybe de minimis compared to the amount of money out there for Mr. Durst's estate. I don't know that for a fact, but it seemed like they were wealthy from the documentary.
So remember, Mr. Durst said in the clip you heard yesterday that he had found out about the reinvestigation from a press person associated with the Durst organization who had told his sister Wendy, who had then told him. So in essence, the press person learned a little bit in advance before things were published that this was going to hit the media. On November 11, 2000, that's when the media began reporting the reinvestigation.
Who cares? Okay, so let's skip off of this one, and we're going to go to... I mean, I want to see me some of this right here. Yeah.
This was a case that was stranger than fiction. But what this case did above all was it resurfaced secrets from the past.
Bob showed a remarkable facility to make up stories at the drop of a hat and to pack them full of details, which makes you think they must be true.
And that's what I noticed. That's what I saw. It's like, this is somebody who, some things going on in his brain, because you can't even write this stuff. I mean, it's crazy. That if you haven't seen this documentary, check it out. And as I mentioned, there's part two out now. This is like, these are the kind of documentaries that I'm like, wow, I'm happy to be in this profession, happy to be involved in the law, because you get to see and you hear these cases and you get to analyze these types of cases, which are so fascinating.
Listen to what he says about the discovery of Susan Berman's body.
Was she cold to the touch? Was she warm to the touch? Could you tell?
I put my hand over her face. I might have left that out. To see if she was breathing. See if I could feel breath. And it felt cold.
And the most compelling part to me of the cross-examination was when he was talking about finding her body.
Her breath felt, her face felt cold.
She's dead. What do you mean her breath felt cold? Was she breathing on you when you got there?
No, she was not breathing.
So how can her breath be cold when she's dead? She's a stiff.
I take it from this, his defense was that he found her dead. And so if he says, hey, you know, I put my hand over her mouth and it was cold, then it looks like she was alive. Well, why didn't you call 911? Why didn't you have the, you know, the follow-up there if she was still breathing when you got there? And then, dang, you know, Perry Mason moment, as I mentioned.
Made plans to spend Christmas with Susan Berman.
Yeah.
Bobby had told her he was going to come to California, and she didn't know when he was going to arrive exactly. And she told friends, hey, we're going to get together. We don't know exactly when.
Mr. Lewin, you may resume your cross-examination of Mr. Durst.
In a coup de grace, to me, they pull out Susan's day planner.
Mr. Durst, you recognize this to be Susan's handwriting, correct?
It might be Susan's handwriting.
She wrote everything down in there. Everything was there, all of her appointments and even small to-do tasks were in there as well.
That's important because Durst insists that he came out west just to take a pre-planned trip with Berman up the California coast, while the prosecution had a totally different explanation. They were convinced that Bob Durst came west for one reason, to murder Susan Berman.
So that's interesting. So does he have any evidence that he came out based on this pre-planned trip, or did he come out under kind of a surprise circumstances? And yeah, you would think that there would be something in there. I guess there's so much more at this point in life where people are just more connected and aware, you know, with the social media and everything going on. And back then it was, you know, he may not have told anybody, he may just showed up and did what he did. Or was there some kind of lover's quarrel situation, as I guess, you know, the other piece of it, or did he find her dead when he got there? And, you know, I think the outcome of the trial and the evidence is interesting. So we'll continue.
We're going to go turn to the 22nd. This is the day that you originally were supposed to meet Susie Berman. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you see any notation on the 22nd, Mr. Durst, that references you?
I do not specifically see anything describing the fact that I was going to arrive that evening.
Yeah, she might have just not put it on there. Maybe he's not that important to her. But he did arrive.
That calendar told the jury Bob was lying. Susan Berman wasn't going up north with him on a trip. She was getting her hair done.
Oh, see, that would probably be in. Okay. So it's not the fact that she didn't mention him. It's literally what he said happened. She's got something different on there.
Mr. Durst, this is my last question. Did you kill Susan Berman?
No.
But if you had, you would lie about it, correct?
Correct.
Nothing further.
Thank you.
That's an interesting one. So that was a quick one. The Devil You Know is just a little trailer. Haven't seen that one.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here. Thanks for checking out the ABC News YouTube channel. If you'd like to get more videos, show highlights.
I think we're going to roll with that. I just want to make a little like precursor to the next video that I'm going to make, which is part two. I'm pretty excited to watch it. And when I do, I'm going to make another video for y'all. Documentaries like this, in my opinion, they give the viewer a perspective of what lawyers are doing. You know, lawyers, my opinion, the best way to represent somebody is to know the truth and figure out exactly what happened. So a lot of the pieces of being a lawyer is just figuring out what exactly happened. And if you do that through science, you do that through testimony, you do that through the story and trying to put together all the pieces. And this documentary did a fantastic job with that. The Jinx, you know, holy shit, this is a wild, wild case. And just the fact that, you know, his story of really getting further through in the justice system than I think most would have been able to, you know, somewhat unscathed, and call that what it is. But, you know, his background and everything and the family that he was in and just his personality is fascinating. You know, an FBI person, you know, who's looking at, you know, could probably give a very good description of where he falls in as far as the type of criminal. And I'm sure that these documentaries go into it. I don't even know if he was ever found to be guilty. I'm guessing that this case, the Covey case, he eventually was, and I'm guessing that's going to be shown in the documentary. But I'm going to get into it, and I'm going to get to the bottom of everything in part two. So if you want to see more videos of True Crime with Lawyer Cliff, go ahead and click the video up here, and we'll get back to you on part two. and continue watching true crime.
The views expressed in this video are solely the opinions of the speaker and do not reflect the official stance of any organization. The information discussed is based on publicly available sources and may not be entirely accurate. It is not intended to serve as legal, financial, or tax advice or provide a definitive account of the events described. Please conduct your own research and consult with a licensed attorney for any legal questions.